providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Oh, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. In this segment, we are going to focus a little bit more on one side of the markets, and that deals with some of the recent IPOs and these unicorn companies in the U.S. I am chatting with Nick Pardini, managing partner at Davos Investment Group and Davos Platinum Research. Now, Nick, when you and I started chatting probably about a year ago now, it might not have been that long ago, one of the first interviews dealt with just the excesses in these unicorn companies and how really when you looked into these companies, they just did not make sense, that they were valued worth so much. And now this year, it's been a big year for some of these unicorns to enter the market through the IPO route, and we've seen some pretty poor performance, and it's all really coming to a head right now with the very weak performance of WeWork and their inability to even get an IPO completed. What's your thought on this general breakdown that's happening within the unicorn realm?
Well, I think it was inevitable. It's basically these things were trading at valuations that were not really, they were priced more to strengthen the books of the venture capitalists and private equities that held them more than their actual fair value. Because one of the key things in the private equity space is that you don't have to mark to market, unlike a hedge fund manager. But I think the thing is that this unicorn thing worked in the first place is because it had the combination of low to negative real rates and growth that was existent, but too slow to provide organic growth in non-tech sectors. And so basically between the period of 2013 to 2017, you almost had no top line revenue growth in the S&P 500. And it wasn't any better in international markets. And so people were basically begging to find growth, top line growth anywhere, no matter how much money people were losing to get that top line growth. And that's what drew the capital into the unicorns. But there's been a shift in the market with growth slowing around the world and people caring more on return of capital versus return on capital, that they, without a credible path to profitability, your valuation is going to take a hit. And that's exactly what's happened to WeWork and a lot of these other names.
So this is kind of a comeback to realization for a lot of investors too. Rather than chasing some of these high flyers, they've gone back into some of the more stable names. But so much money was put into these unicorn companies, and in all fairness, a lot of money was made on the back of some of these very high valuations. But now that we're seeing some of these companies that are free trading, say Lyft, Uber, these companies, Peloton even, is looking quite weak. Do you think that this could be a sector that causes a more broad liquidity squeeze for the markets?
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is the IPO market is a little different, because the original intention of the IPO market and how it was, say, in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, when you had companies like Nike and Microsoft and Walmart and even Google in the early 2000s, they IPO'd relatively early in their growth phase, right when growth is really about to take off and there are early signs of profitability. Whereas now, due to other Sarbanes-Oxley and more easy money in the private market, so you don't have to, such as from SoftBank and their Vision Fund, and a variety of other sources of money that you get without having to go public. Now we're at a time when these tech companies go public, it's like they're selling to an acquirer. They're already at their peak growth phase, and that's usually when you want to sell a company. And they're basically, a lot of them, these guys took the public market as assuming they'd be a bag holder and buy anything because it's this cool new tech coming from Silicon Valley or China or wherever. But the thing is that's not the case. The public markets are smart. There's a lot of smart active managers who have been getting aggressive on the short side to take advantage of these extremes. And so it should be no surprise then when you're selling at the very possible peak, and there's basically, and the amount of capital allocated to tech, whether it's tech versus public, tech versus private, remains fixed. When there's a bunch of net sellers and there's no new buyers, that's what happens.
Yeah, that is what happens. And the stocks have been heading down. And these companies, too, when you just look at some of the financial statements that they produce, they are in a lot of trouble. There are companies that need to keep on raising money because they keep on losing a lot of money. But they did get these high valuations. And you know what? There have been a couple IPOs that have done actually quite well. Look at that Beyond Meat IPO. So where's the difference then between, let's say, Beyond Meat and these other companies?
I think the differentiator, and this is also why some of the IPOs, such as Pinterest, have outperformed a little bit, is that, and some of the more software as a service oriented ones as well, is because if the market believes you have a credible path to profitability, they'll give you still the benefit of the doubt. We're not in full risk off mode yet. But the problem is a lot of these do not have a path that's going to show like four consecutive quarters of profit for in a reasonable amount of time to convince investors to what they think is going to be a bumpy ride. A lot of people expect a recession to happen. And so that's, I think, the difference. Like if these unicorns can prove that they have a path to becoming not just a growth company, but a growth company that can generate positive free cash flow, and then they'll be fine. Like Amazon's a perfect example of this. Amazon maybe never showed that much GAAP profit, but they've always generated positive free cash flow and just reinvested in other parts of the business. So I think it's the thing that differentiates it is the ability to generate positive free cash flow.
So it's no longer just about, let's say, user-based growth then, hey, or subscriber-based. It is finally actually getting back to some sort of free cash flow.
Yeah, like just revenues and like the thing that was different between this time and just the 90s tech bubble where people cared more about users and clicks and things like that is that a lot of the reason why these kept going as long as they did because they're actually growing in top line revenue. But if you are selling something that costs a dollar for 90 cents, it's pretty easy to grow revenue or relatively easy to grow revenue. But if you have to sell it at cost or higher, the growth trajectory is a lot lower. And that's the problem with a lot of these companies is that they've been effectively selling or heavily discounting their services so that, such as Uber is a good example of this, that they can't make money at the current price. This is what happened to MoviePass, which is the most extreme example of it. They were selling tickets that they had to pay $12 each for a $9.99 month subscription.
Yeah, that business model, just you understand why it cannot work, and finally how the market does take note of that. You did mention how lower interest rates were helping these companies raise money and actually just keep the ball rolling in terms of continuing to grow. And you know what? The trajectory for interest rates, at least when it comes to the Fed, is at least gradually lower interest rates. Will this be enough to keep some of these unicorn companies afloat?
Well, I mean, the reason why interest rates are falling because it's perceived falling growth. You need to have a minimum amount of economic growth so that people feel comfortable investing in these speculative projects, no matter even if rates are low. So if you have, and I just don't see, just from, I'm going to talk about this in a different interview, but I don't see a really a macro environment where you see an increase in growth without an increase in inflation, especially given the way fiscal policy is trending.
Yeah, we've talked about that balance between inflation and also kind of a macro growth story, and that's a whole different conversation here. So then, Nick, where does this leave investors then? With the shift still towards some of these safety stocks or recession-protected stocks, is that just going to be the continued play for investors here as we don't find the value or don't find the profits in any sort of these unicorn or high-flying stocks?
Well, I think like similar to the last tech bubble, some of these unicorns will survive and figure out a way to make money, and those will be the ones to buy. But they're gonna have to prove that, and that's also why Tesla's continue to struggle, because when they started having one free cash flow positive quarter, they weren't able to repeat it. Like for over a 4-quarter period, like that would change my mind. For example, on that stock, which as a disclosure, I am bearish Tesla currently. But when it comes to, so I think the main thing you have to look at is, yeah, you're going to have to find companies that are generating positive free cash flow. I'm not sure about buying staples in other defensive sectors, just because they're already priced at a very high valuation, especially for how low growth is in a lot of those names. But you're just going to have to, I mean, I mean, with it in this kind of market, you're just it's kind of really tricky. Like, I'd say on one end, you buy stuff that would do well in an inflationary recovery, such as emerging markets, energy, and non-like U.S. dollar, non-rate dependent things. And then on the other side, you hedge that out with buying some things that are more that are a little bit more defensive, but I would say not the traditional defensive names. You got to make sure that are a reasonable valuation, so that you don't get crushed if rates go higher. Because a lot of the defensive names, such as REITs and utilities and consumer staples, are trading effectively like synthetic bonds. And I think the real asset bubble is not in the equity market, but in the fixed income market.
All right, we're going to wrap it up there, Nick. It's great having you on the show. Again, managing partner at Davos Investment Group and Davos Platinum Research. Thanks for taking some time today, Nick. Have a great rest of your weekend.